Greetings, everyone. This is Shirley Draper, joint host of the Sunstone Firesides podcast. And today I am going to talk about the intersection of Mormon culture and sexism. And what I mean by Mormon culture is pretty much the state of Utah. I mean, even if you were not born and raised in the Mormon religion, you were raised in Mormon culture if you were raised in Utah. And that has a lot of dimensions. But today I really want to focus on the sexism that's really kind of inherent in a lot of patriarchal religions. And Mormonism is not an exception. And certainly Mormon fundamentalism that I was raised in was no exception to this. And so the expectations and the roles and the traditions and the socialization that women encounter in this culture is something very interesting, and in how it impacts the political structure of our communities and the social structures. And so today I have a really cool guest on. It's Mayor Donia Jessup from the city of Hilldale. She's also my very dear friend. Say hi, Donia.
Hi out there.
Or hi, Donia. And so I'm going to talk to with her about her experiences in Mormon fundamentalism, how that impacted her political career, and how she experiences that. But before we do, I'm going to give you some statistics that I think are really, really interesting. So, despite the fact that women make up more than half of the population, we're talking about 50.6% of the population, women only comprise 23.7% of Congress. They make up only about 28.7% of legislatures nationwide. In Utah, it's not better. It's only 24% of the women in legislature. Of state governors, of the 50 states, only 9, which is 18%, are women. So what we have here is that if our state looked like our governing body, the population of this state would be 73% white males. And this is not the case. Now, here's an even more interesting statistic. Men named John. In a recent New York Times Glass Ceiling Index report, which is a marker of gender equality or lack thereof in American industries, they said that there are almost as many men named John in American leadership roles as there are women, period. Just men named John either outnumber or equal the total number of women. So in the 24 of Fortune 500 CEOs are women, down from 32 in 2017, while 23 are men named John. There are more Republican senators and more Democratic governors named men named John than total women who are Republican senators or Democratic governors. This is such an interesting statistic to me because, again, women are nearly 51% of the population, but men named John make up only 3.3% of the groups that these statistics are selected from. So, on that basis, we're going to be talking about internalized sexism and various kinds of sexism. But right now, we're going to introduce Mayor Donia. Can we call you that?
Yes, please do.
And I'm just going to throw out one more statistic in my really quick research, which I can't verify at this moment. But it looks to me like there are as many mayors in the state of Utah named John as there are female mayors. And so we can check that. But right now, so we're going to talk with Donia. So you were born and raised FLDS, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So just really briefly, maybe tell me about your journey from FLDS and how you ended up back in the community and why you were running for mayor.
Okay. So I left the FLDS community 6 years ago. My husband and I took our children and moved to Santa Clara, Utah. We were there. We stayed in the St. George area for 2.5 years, and we made the choice to move back and help repair the communities. When I made the choice to go back, it was not with the thought in mind, well, I'm going to go back and become mayor. But when I got back, they had just started to set up the grassroots coalition to take over the city government. As you all know, we cannot make changes in a community if the city government is not ready to change. That year, there was 4 seats available. So we've formed that grassroots
Short Creek Community Alliance,
and really went to work cleaning up the voter registration and campaigning for the first time in Hilldale, and we were able to obtain all four of those seats. So that was a short way of saying how I left the church and then moved back and helped become very proactive in moving the community forward.
Great. Okay, and so one of the things that I'm hoping you'll talk about is when you made the decision to run for mayor, you didn't make the decision to run for mayor as a woman. Talk to me about that.
So when I made the decision to run, I never even thought about, well, I'll be the first woman to run for mayor here in Hilldale. My whole thought process was, who can represent the people? These people have never had true representation, and I have such a love for people in general. My sole thought was, who will be able to represent these people in the way they need represented? And I had a full knowledge. It was just an innate knowledge that I could represent all the demographics of Hilldale.
And I find that so interesting because there are very many layers and complexities to this. But in my opinion, you know, not choosing to run as a mayor to stick to the man or show them that a woman's better, it's literally about your love of the people and you're wanting to do the very best thing for the people, which is really informed by the fact that you are a woman, right? And especially the way we were raised to be nurturing and caring and loving and look out for each other. And so it's a really complex thing. You know, I really want to talk about how women are socialized to be submissive and to take, you know, the back seat and all of this stuff. And in that way, I decry it. But in another way, you know, women are allowed in Western civilization to experience that nurturing and emotional and love and all that and express it in a public way where men are kind of, you know, looked down on if they do that. And so the fact that your socialization informed that your need to run for mayor and to take care of this population is so interesting to me.
Right. I really think that there was a couple of things that the heart was actually torn from the community of this people. I feel like it needed someone with a lot of heart to go back in and repair. And then, you know, I've been asked in other interviews, do you consider yourself a feminist? And I'm like, I absolutely consider myself a feminist. But above that, I consider myself a humanist. I care about all of the people, and I honor all the men in my life who have helped me become the person I am. And I also honor the women in my life that have helped me become who I am. I guess I'm kind of an enigma where I have never seen, well, she's a woman, so this, and he's a man, so that. I was raised with that the man was in charge and you always check out with the man. But I don't know why. It just never even occurred to me when I ran for mayor that would even be an issue to anybody.
Yeah. And that's interesting because my whole experience of growing up there was definitely a lot of male-female roles and the sexism. And, you know, even, you know, in seventh grade, I remember trying to prove that I was just as good as the boys in math. And whenever the teacher would say something like, girls can't do math or whatever, then I would say, no, that's not true. And you know, and being this overtly feminist, you know, kind of enigma in the population. And so it's so interesting to me that you did not experience that. And yet here you are. So let's talk about what happened when you first took office and the overt sexism, this stated and the written sexism that you encountered.
Okay, so there were some interesting things that happened. The first day I walked into office, the former city manager said, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm here to go to work. And he said, well, you're not needed here. All we need you to do is smile pretty and sign the papers when we tell you to sign. And that angered me so much. I told him, change had just walked through Hilldale's door, and we're going to do it my way. And that was my very first initial wow moment of what I was up against. Within the next 2 weeks, I had 6 letters of resignation, some of which stated the reason that they could not work with me was because I was a woman and because I was an apostate. And I don't know, maybe I see things with rose-colored glasses. I just did not see that one coming. So it really made me pay attention a lot more to how people felt about women in leadership positions, especially there in Hilldale. And now that I've been there for a year and a half, it has shown up many times. But I feel like I've been doing a good enough job that people are starting to hopefully, you know, possibly make the distinction that it doesn't matter if you're man or woman, it's the kind of leader you are and how you show up for people.
That brings up, you know, so many things in my mind, one of which is that, yes, you know, in Colorado City, in Hilldale particularly, is what we're talking about right now. So in Hilldale, there was a lot of socialization. You know, there's a lot of male privilege. Fundamentalism was how everyone was taught. It's not now. We'll go into that later. And it's difficult for men to give up privilege. And so when there's a man around that he has expectations of, you know, being in charge or calling the shots or those kinds of things. And it's not as overt that way in other communities. It's not out in your face as much. And I remember when I was choosing to leave the community and always in my life hearing about how wicked the outside world was because the women led the men around and they were just whipped and all of this stuff. And so when I moved to St. George and I started interacting, I was thinking, this is going to be so great because it's so much more egalitarian and I'm going to be able to be equal. And imagine just my horrified frustration at encountering the exact same thing, only in just a much more covert manner. It just wasn't stated as much, but it was just understood that the men were going to take charge, that the men were going to lead out, that men were going to be chosen first in positions of authority or leadership or get that promotion or get that better pay. And so it was hugely eye-opening to me that the sexism absolutely persists and maybe just has a better look to it. It has a better face. It's not stated that that's what's going to happen. It's just what happens.
It just happens. Yeah, I've had a couple of interesting experiences. I've had some of the older gentlemen that live in Hilldale tell their sons that support me as mayor, are you a part of that petticoat government up there? And we had kind of a outrageous town council meeting, and one of the town councilmen after stated that as the oldest man in the room, he felt like he should have set things in order. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Very interesting how that mentality is still very much there, even though, and so I've had to, you know, step up and say, I'm in charge of this meeting. I will handle this. And it's kind of hard for people to get that sometimes. It's hard for me to get it sometimes, honestly.
Right.
And I think that I'm big and brave and strong and the leader, and then it shows up for me over and over when I least expect it. When a man comes in and he's upset and yelling, I have to really go inside myself and remind myself, I am the boss, I am the leader, and I can do this. Because being brought up that we just refer to a man and he must have the best ideas and that sort of thing, is it still shows up for me. So I have to be aware of it so I don't let it control.
And that brings up a really interesting point I want to make. But before, I want you to talk about an experience you had actually at Sunstone in Hilldale, where you were addressing the crowd. And can you talk about that?
You have to remind me.
Okay, so you were addressing the crowd, and you were thinking to yourself, why am I up here instead of these men?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I had this interesting experience. I was supposed to speak for 45 minutes, and I looked down in the audience and there was four elderly men in the audience that I had always spoken in every church meeting. They had been called in leadership roles in the community throughout the years. And I really had to have a little come to Jesus with myself right there on the stand, because I looked down and saw them and thought, what am I doing up here when those men should be the ones up here leading this community? And I'm like, where are the older men that are supposed to be running this town? And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I am the one that's supposed to be doing this job. That's why I'm in this position right now. But it has shown up as a daily battle for me. It's getting so much better now as I'm much more grounded in my role. And those men have a great deal of respect for me. I actually, in order for me to make it through that presentation at Sunstone, one of those gentlemen walked in late and right in the middle of my talk. And to meet that fear head on, I always just say it. And so I just said his name right out loud. And I said, I'm okay with you being here, and I'm okay up here speaking to you instead of you speaking to me. And he was down there going, oh, well, good, you're doing a good job. And he totally didn't get what I was saying because he's never been a woman in that place. And so it's very hard for men to understand why I would feel that way because they've never been there their entire lives taking that backseat role. And they don't know what that feels like.
Right. And they haven't been socialized that it should be them. Yeah, yeah. That there should be anything different. And so that brings up what I really wanted to talk about regarding implicit bias. Mm-hmm. And so when we are socialized, I mean, I'm talking to you women, when we are socialized that men should be in leadership, and so we vote that way, we are perpetuating the status quo. And so I think it would be, it's just such an amazing tool. If you go to tolerance.org, there's an unconscious bias test that asks a bunch of different questions and you have to answer quickly. And it kind of reveals this inner bias, this implicit bias that we have. And it doesn't just go to, you know, feminism or sexism. It talks about millennials and people of color and the elderly and all of that. And all of the ways that we preserve those structures of power and the status quo. And once we become aware of it, like Downey has, then it no longer runs the show, right? And I'm thinking, you know, 50% of the people are voting to maintain these structures of patriarchy. And so it's on us. You know, if we wanted it different, it would be different. We would vote differently.
And I think the more women that step up and take those leadership roles, that is just it is the only and perfect example to the younger generation coming up that we are the only ones that can make that change.
Right. And so I really want to talk about one of the things that creates this implicit bias. And it's not just Utah culture, right? Mormon culture. This is nationwide. These numbers reflect the nationwide trends. And so we have to look at where we're getting that. So, yes, we're being socialized in the home and within religions and within structures, and they're pretty overt in Utah. But nationwide, it's happening because a lot of times that's how we see ourselves in crowds. When you look at movies that come out of Hollywood and you see the percentage of women in power or leadership roles in movies, when you look at the people in crowds, the number 17, 19, and 22 appear over and over and over, that there are only 17% of the people in this crowd are women. Only 17% of the people in power are women. And you see that over and over and over. And then that's what the population looks like. So that's how our representation shows up in Congress and our CEO offices. And that's where a lot of this implicit bias comes from, too. And so we have to really confront that internalized sexism. And so, you know, this really brings up something that I see a lot, and it really bothers me. You know, women say that they're feminists, but then they repost sexist memes that are just funny, you know, on Facebook. Or they perpetuate the myth that women are disorganized or don't know what they want. And then I see a lot of times where women just even deny being a feminist. It's like, well, I think women have rights, but I'm not a feminist. And I'll tell you why. It's because people have hijacked the word to say, that's a bad thing. Right. If you're a feminist, then you're a feminazi and you're, you know, a horrible person. And so we have to deny even being a feminist. And I think that's absolutely false. We have to stand up and confront that idea and become aware of it. Is that something that you encounter?
Absolutely. I find that when I talk about feminism to men and women, they don't understand what that means. And so when I simply say to them, do you believe that a man and a woman working in the same job should be paid the same amount? And they're like, well, of course. I'm like, you're a feminist.
Exactly.
And they're like, is that all that means? Yes, it means that you believe that men and women are equal, that we're all humans. Do you believe that we're all humans? And well, yeah, I do. And that we can each do the same job. Yeah. And you're a feminist.
Right. And receive the same value.
Yes.
And I think that rather than letting people who have privilege, you know, are afraid of losing privilege, and they co-opt our words and our language that we take that back. Mm-hmm. You know, we stand up. And when people say, I'm not a feminist, and then trouble them on that. Say, why not? Do you believe that men and women can be equal?
Right.
You know?
And I've learned to put it in, use different vocabulary for different people, because then they really get it. Just speaking about the equality. Equality is something pretty much everyone can get on board with. And so I try to not be arbitrary. I just say, how do you feel your wife should be treated when she is, because I actually had a conversation with someone on Friday. And when the conversation started, he was so adamant about certain things. And so when I broke it down into smaller language, he was like, I guess I'm a feminist also. And I said, welcome aboard.
and you're so much more engaging and loving and welcoming than I am. You know, I'm the kind of person that just wants to take a hammer and hit them over the head and say, now, welcome to feminism.
And I kindly say, come along, you will join us, I promise. You'll be so happy to be a part of it.
Come on in, the water's fine.
Right.
But it's always been that way with us, for the ladies.
Which makes us a great team. It does.
And so Donnie is exactly that caring, loving personality that wants to help and serve others. And that's what makes her such a great mayor. So let's go back a little bit and talk more about your experiences being a mayor. One of the things that I see over and over is this novelty that you're a woman mayor. Yes, but also that you're a woman mayor from the notorious polygamous enclave of Hilldale, you know?
Right.
And so I see it happening a lot where people want to interview you. There are stories there and documentaries and all of these things. And it really all is about this novelty about, you know, the polygamous community and all that, and that you're being a little bit tokenized and mm-hmm. and used in that way. So can you talk about that some?
Yeah. In the beginning, the questions that were asked are things that I had never really thought about. It was more the outside world had so much curiosity. And so I just told them, I'll tell you what, I am an open book. I don't have anything to hide. I'm glad to answer your questions. But as time has gone on, I have changed so much. I have come more solid in my role. And I realize what I have done becoming the first, not only woman mayor, but non-FLDS person to be in a leadership position in Hilldale. And it is kind of a novelty in the beginning, but now we're down to the brass tacks. We're down to the hard work. And just being a woman is not enough to lead a city. You have to have vision and ideas and plans and then be able to hold those up through educated choices and decision-making and that sort of thing. So when people go back and ask me questions about the beginning and all of that, I almost can't remember what they're talking about because I have moved on. And so I've tried to say to interviewers, I have moved on. I wished you would. Some of the newspaper articles, they absolutely have to go back and say, this was a polygamous community, what ran by Warren Jeffs. And I'm like, if you won't write about that, I'll interview with you. If you want to write about that, I'm not going to interview with you anymore because I moved forward. I have moved on. Our community has moved on. Step up, people. Move along with us. Don't keep trying to drag us back in the crab pot.
That is so amazing, and I love it. And I see you doing that in so many ways. You're so progressive in bringing in services and resources and employment and all of these amazing things, and not letting the town be defined by what it used to be.
Right.
And I love that you own that. So let's talk a little bit about that. And I know because polygamy still does exist in the community. And so, so talk about how you include people from all different cultures and the changes that have happened.
So that has happened quite organically, on its own. We've had a lot of people move out of the area and a lot of new people move in, and I am all about people. And to me, it doesn't matter what color you are, what sex you are, what religion you are. To me, it's all about being human. And so I respect and love you for that and in that capacity. We still have some polygamists in the area and some FLDS. So understand, just because you're FLDS, you're not polygamist. And just because you're polygamist, you're not FLDS. So we have all kinds of different people in the area, and I welcome them all. We now have new businesses coming into the community, And along with those businesses are their owners and their managers. They'll be moving in from California. So I just see that as a great way to introduce Hildel to the world and the world to him, Hildel, in a very safe and organic way.
I love that. And so what I've seen from your administration, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks to me like you're very, very inclusive. So, you know, just because someone happens to be FLDS or happens to be, you know, from the Church of Jesus Christ, that does not factor into how you treat them or...
No, it never has. And there are certain things that I try to do very specific. Like, I know that there's some FLDS that live in the middle of town, and we had a big music festival come into town and wanted to perform in the middle of town. And rather than that, we put them up in the Maxwell Park area, which made it so if you wanted to be involved in that and wanted to enjoy that music, you could go up there in the beautiful mountains and all of that, and then it wouldn't be offensive to the FLDS that are living right in the middle of town. So there's been some navigating of that sort of thing, so we're not offensive and hurting anyone. But people can choose to go participate in any activity that they would like to participate in. So, yeah.
You look pretty righteous, so I'm not sure you're going to understand this simile. But most podcasts are like beer. You have to drink a lot to get that buzz. The Sunstone Magazine podcast, on the other hand, is like whiskey. Small glass, big buzz. That's because our podcast isn't about interviews, conversation, or witty banter. Rather, it presents audible quality recordings of Sunstone's best articles, essays, fiction, and poetry. Do you want to hear what the best LDS minds have to say when they say it perfectly? Then this podcast is for you. Listen to some of our free episodes at patreon.com/sunstone, and then join us for a weekly shot of the best of Mormon thought and experience. And yes, you'll be able to drive home safely afterward and get a temp recommend if you want.
Okay. All right. So what are some of the other major changes that are happening?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many changes that have happened and are happening in Hildel. Working with the state of Utah and Washington County, all of the other agencies, we've been able to get a lot of resources into town. One of the most exciting things we have is Short Creek Valley Healthcare coming in. We're setting up our own clinic. It's been 15 years since we've had our own healthcare there in Hildel, Colorado City. So to me, that is one of the most exciting and progressive things that have happened. Well, alongside, we also have another business. For the first time, we have a business that GoEd actually came up with a tax incentive program for them to move to Hildel. We've never had that in Hildel. I always tell people every single day in Hildel, we celebrate a first. And those two things are yet another first for Hildel.
Okay, and to clarify, GoEd stands for Governor's Office of Economic Development in Utah. So talk about some of the robust collaborations you do have with the state governments.
We have Medicare, Medicaid, UWS, what else?
GoEd.
GoEd, the Governor's Office, Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox has been fabulous working with Hildel. All of the surrounding mayors in our area and in Salt Lake area have been very supportive and reached out in any capacity that they could help. Southwest Behavior, we do a lot of work with mental health out there, and we've had so many people reach out and to say, we want to be a part of the recovery, we want to be a part of the rebuilding. It's so impressive to me how many people step up. And I always have to say, you know, a big shout out for the state of Utah, how they have stepped up when we were ready to open our doors. I cannot have enough appreciation for them.
Yes, big shout out to Spencer Cox. And I'm just going to give him a shameless plug right now. I think he is such a phenomenal human being, and I hope he becomes the next governor. And if you want to donate to his campaign for me, use the code VOTE40. I think Spencer Cox has been so amazing and so helpful for the city of Hildel. I can't even begin to express how much I appreciate his working with us.
I completely concur with you, Shirley. I'm so excited to see him running for governor, and I'm behind him 100%.
Okay, so that was a little aside, but so going, you know, just to kind of bring this back together, talking about feminism and how to empower women, because I know we're spending a lot of time in healing on you in particular, trying to really empower the population, heal the population, make sure that people are economically stable, that have access to education, have access to housing and, you know, appropriate services. And so I really kind of want to tie all this back in. What do you want people to think about and talk about when they talk about Hilldale going forward?
I would love the people to just change the narrative, the entire narrative, that Hilldale is Zion's backyard. It is a beautiful place to visit and to see it as a phoenix. It's being rebuilt out of the ashes of what was left over. People continue to try to talk about Warren Jeffs and the damage he caused. But the message that I want to send is Hilldale is all about people. It is the people who built that community, that made that community strong. It is said far and wide that if you want a job done right, get someone from Hilldale to do it. I would love people to remember that. That is our history. Our history is our integrity. It's our industrious people. It is the way that we can come back from so much trauma and how we can stand up and lead. And that's the narrative that I would like people to think about when they think about Hilldale. Come out and visit our mountains and watch us as we blaze our trails through the hills and be a part of that. Be a part of the change. It's such a positive change. People who are coming down and becoming engaged in the change, they can't help it. They want to come back. We have people who want to move there once they visited. And that's the narrative I would like people to talk about.
And I think that it's really important to say this is really a story about resilience. Mm-hmm. And when you look around in Hilldale, so in so many areas, it really is women leading out. Because for one reason, it was the women who were left there. You know, a lot of families were not left intact. And so there are men there and they're doing great things, but a lot of women are taking leadership position and leading out on the reforms and making sure services and things like that happen. And so I think, you know, in that regard, Hilldale can kind of be a little bit of a light to the rest of Utah. You know, if Hilldale can elect a female mayor, the rest of the state can do this, right?
Right.
And
I like to, I want to be careful because I never want to put men down, or a man in particular. But the men from this community were so incredibly hurt. They had their priesthood stripped from them, their families stripped from them, their wives, their children were stripped from them. And what was left was the women. And I tell people often, a woman will not lay down and say, okay, you got me. She will step up. She will make sure her children are fed. She will continue to work no matter what to take care of her family. And we see that in Hilldale. We see the women that have stepped up and are leading out. And the men that are there to support that and to lead out also.
I think that's just really great. And especially because, you know, there's no requirement about gender to do a good job there. And that's what I see that is so unique and is such a different story from the past and also from a lot of other places in Utah. And so I think that this can be kind of a case study on what can go right. You know, once a community is broken down to its very bare minimum, what arises out of the ashes and what can go right. And so you actually have, you know, a built-in case study, the before and the after. And I think it's so amazing.
Well, yeah, and an interesting thing is in the past, if I was have a good idea, I would go to my husband and I would say, is this a good idea? What do you think? And then he would take it the next step and go talk to the bishop or whatever, and it would have to come from him. And now when a woman comes to me and says, I have this idea, what do you think? And I say, what do you think? Well, I think it's a great idea. And I say, well, I think it's a great idea too. How are you going to implement? And she's like, I wasn't planning on implementing. I'm like, well, you are now. What can I do to support you? And you'll find that so much. It's a good idea means you're going to be leading a good idea. So yeah, that's been really great to just help empower each other. And sometimes when you hear the words, you can do it, is all you need to actually start an amazing accomplishment.
I agree. And so coming back to the whole John thing, I will say that at one point I was giving these statistics at a place where Mayor John Pike of St. George was. And I think he has been one of the best allies I personally have ever had and the city of Hilldale has had. He has been so amazing to work with us.
Yes,
and so when I talk about these statistics about men, and particularly men named John, to me, it's just information. You know, it's nothing against men. It's nothing against men named John particularly.
Mm-hmm. My city manager's name is John also.
Oh, hi, John. We miss you. And so it's really about educating ourselves about what that looks like and then asking those men named John to advocate for us, to join us and help us make these changes.
Empower us.
Because men can be great, great allies in this work too, especially when they, you know, read the studies, and there are a million out there, and I'm not even going to try to name them all, about what it costs us just in terms of finance, just in terms of cost to our GDP, for not including women at the table when we're encouraging leadership.
And I want to say I have a lot of men named John that are my biggest fans. So, so yeah, you're right.
So you men named John, you know, let's have these conversations. I think that women need to have these conversations. We need to confront our internalized sexism, but we also need men to say, let's talk about this. Let's talk about why this is happening. And we need to be allies for each other.
Right. And I also think women need to talk about their internalized sexism. Until I actually took a hard look in the mirror and said, what is bothering me? What, you know, and I actually went to my city manager and I said, this is where I'm having a hard time. It is my habit. And I didn't even realize it was there. It was my habit to come to you. And when I give you an idea, I say, what do you think? Do you think it's a good idea? And he is, he's so supportive of anything, my vision and my ideas. But he said, you know, it's been a real problem for me because it's almost like you need permission from me. And I just need you to know that you don't need permission from me. I support you 100%, whatever your visions and dreams are, this community, because you've never led us astray. So whatever you want, I'm here to empower those choices you make, not give you permission to do that. So I really appreciate the men that I've surrounded myself with, because they help remind me that I'm the leader, just simply by respecting that role.
Yes. Wow, what a great ally you've got. So I mean, thank you for being here and taking time, because I know everybody wants a piece of your time.
Well, it only took you and I 3 months, and we're best friends. 3 months to get together to do this.
Right. We're both very, very busy doing what we do. And so, like I say, I really honor that. I honor what you do. And I have just been so blown away by, I know Donia, right? I already know what a loving, incredible person she is. But watching you in this leadership role, bringing that love and that inclusivity and all those quote unquote female attributes and turning them into incredible leadership attributes, and the way you do that and include people and listen and respect people, I just have so much awe and regard for that.
Well, thank you. I wanted to say, when I first decided to run for mayor, it was Shirley that I turned to and asked her, do you think I could do this? And she was like, are you kidding? You are the one to do this. And then I started to really delve into, how do you do politics? And I didn't even know what a platform was, honestly. And people would say, what's your platform? And I said, what is that? So I went to work. I educated myself. I read books. I talked to people that were already there and asked them what I needed to do. And I always say that I had to come to Jesus with myself, and I did. What do I believe in? What do I believe is important? And the number one thing that showed up for me was relationships. And I thought, well, the most important thing in this life to me is relationships. It's how you treat people and how people are treated. That's how we're going to change the world, is the way we treat each other. So that was my platform, was relationships. And I thought, oh, everybody's going to think I'm a girly girl And there we went, slipped right into sexism. And I thought, no, I'm going to be Donia no matter what. I'm going to show up as myself no matter where I'm at, no matter who, what table I'm sitting at, and I will remain vulnerable. And so just to be able to always show up as myself and to always let my heart be touched by other people. Sometimes you get overwhelmed. And like yesterday, I had a complete shutdown where I didn't leave my house. I was just done for the day, but I just needed to, you know, recharge. And so that I can always make sure that my heart is involved in every decision and in working with the people. And I think that is the most important part right now, especially when we have so much, electronics and our faces are in phones and we're disconnecting from human beings. The most important thing we can do is to connect as human beings. And that's been an interesting thing for me in politics, is just the connecting with human beings. That's really where it's at.
So bringing your whole heart, bringing your whole feminist being to this really, I mean, gendered role. I mean, our political system is inherently patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
And so bringing all of that to that has made it so much more powerful and incredible. And I think that is such a great study. I think that sociology should devote an entire section to what a female, what feminism can bring to politics.
Oh, absolutely. I think we are at a crucial point right now where we need feminism in politics. The only way this world is going to heal and move on.
I agree. So on that note, I am going to wrap up here, but I just want to shout out and say, let's educate ourselves about what women bring to the table in both politics and business leadership. In this way, we elevate everybody, and we owe it to ourselves. And we owe it to our daughters. We've got to leave them a better world than we inherited. Let's do it for others too. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you, Mayor Donia, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.